All right, so let me just briefly recall this paper. It's a paper about the Crait Nebula in Orion and its extension, which is called Orion A, with hundreds of young interstellar objects which can be tracked by Gaia and for which parallaxes can be measured. And if you have both parallaxes and proper motions, it means that you are able to distinguish 3D motions of these objects and possibly also of the interstellar medium. And that's what I would like to show you right here. It's it's a beautiful measurement. This is the cloud. The dots are young stellar objects. And you can see a lot of these measured by Gaia. And it seems that both gas motions, radial gas motions, and these young stellar objects are correlated. So it means that their motion is somehow related to the gas motion. And moreover, when they tracked these motions backwards in time, these 3D vectors backwards in time, it seems that they correlate and they meet at one region, well, not one spot, but one region in space. And so that's what is probably the most interesting, this sort of archaeology of stellar populations, because with precise parallaxes and proper motions, you can measure, for example, mutual distances of these objects. And this is this plot, figure four, with this is the normalized some distance between different objects. And it has a clear and distinct minimum at about 6 million years in the past. Again, very interesting signature. Signature of a large event which created hundreds of interstellar, of young stellar objects. And it seems like an explosion or explosive star formation, which created a lot of them. And they, either due to gas motions, I mean, inherent gas motions during the stellar formation, or during close encounters between these young stellar objects, which can eject during three-body encounters, they can eject some objects to further distances so that they can be tracked backwards. So this is a, I think, HR diagram of this population or subpopulation in the Orion A cloud. But what I wanted to show you is this reconstruction from, I think, this is the current situation in the middle. And in the past, as you can see, these objects were much closer to each other. And it seems that they were formed together in a certain region of space. All right, very interesting paper, I think. As a second point, I'd like to show our current work because our PhD student Pavel Ševeček works very hard on a SPH modeling of asteroid collisions. So just let me show you the, at least very briefly his work, which can be also adapted to different situations because SPH is a well-known numerical technique which can be used to track, for example, a circumstellar medium. So in this case, we actually track asteroids which collide with each other. And Pavel is able to create a beautiful and very useful graphical interface for these computations so that you can measure and you can study these colliding asteroids in a great amount of detail. You can, for example, select individual particles. You can watch the moon forming events during these collisions. And of course, it allows you not only this qualitative description of these events, but quantitative description, what happens when two asteroids collide and eject some material. So it's a sort of useful interface for, let me say, general SPH simulations. And moreover, one recent development is that Pavel created a sort of a graphical setup for these simulations. So you can use small segments of the code, including all relevant parameters, which can be set up in a graphical interface. And then you can perform a simulation simply by clicking on the spot and turning on evaluate. So that's a sort of might be useful for some of them. Tak, a teďka to kratičké shrnutí, jestli dovolíte. Myslím, že to spojení je teďka mnohem lepší, mnohem stabilnější, tak to snad teďka rychle využijeme. Tak my jsme se minule zabývali jednak rovnicí tepelné rovnováhy. První rovnice byla rovnice tepelné rovnováhy a druhá byla rovnice pro transport energie. A my jsme se zatím teda zastavili u transportu energie zářením. A to takovým způsobem, že jsme nejprve, doufám, docela důkladně prodiskutovali, co to je opacita a co to je za veličinu a jaké jevy mikroskopické se na ní podílejí. Takže to bych vás taky poprosil, abyste té opacitě věnovali pozornost a zkusili si třeba vzpomenout na všechny ty jevy, které hrají roli, přispívají k opacitě. Myslím, že ty jevy, ten seznam začínal na nejvyšších energiích Comptonovým rozptylem. A na těch úplně nejnižších energiích, kterým jsme se dostali a které jsou mnohem nižší, než je vůbec jako relevantní pro hvězdy, tak bylo absorpce prachových zrn. Takže to zkusme si vzpomenout na všechny ty jevy. No a potom jsme dokázali taky s pomocí nějakých geometrických úvah napsat rovnice přenosu záření, což je pro naše účely, řekl bych, příliš podrobná rovnice. Protože používá veličinu intenzita, my jsme ji měli teda závislou na velkém R a theta. A předpokládali jsme jaksi symetrii v azimutu. A pro naše účely je příliš podrobná, protože tady obsahuje to theta, které nás také nezajímá, ale musíme se s ním nějak vypořádat. A to právě budeme dělat dnes, kdy si tuto rovnici, já ji tady zapíšu, k které jsme došli, to bylo DI podle DR, sinus theta, minus 1 lomeno R sinus theta, DI podle D theta plus kappa rho I, když to máme na levé straně, tak je to s plusem, minus J krát rho, neboli emisi, rovná se nule. Tak dneska tu rovnici zintegrujeme a podíváme se, jaké vztahy mezi těmi jednotlivými členy jsou. Jenom nezapomeňme, že jsme také minule zaváděli nějaké integrální veličiny. Konkrétně se setkáváme s hustotou energie, s tokem, značovaným H, a tlakem záření, neboli P. So let me perform this integration. It's the first integral. the RTE. And it's quite straightforward because it's an integral over the solid angle, as usually. And we can compute it pretty straightforwardly with one exception. So it's an integral over omega from the first term, di over dr times cosine theta. And what I see immediately, because I times cosine theta d omega will definitely result in the flux. So then this first term is equal to dh over dr. No problem at all. The second term is slightly more complicated because we have the partial derivative of I with respect to theta, where we don't know the exact function I as a function of theta. You don't know it. It's a general function, right, at this stage. Times sine theta d omega. And we have to integrate this term by means of Kapartes. Which is luckily pretty straightforward because this Kapartes integration of this part without one over, so it's one over r, of course, this part is the primitive function I times sine theta from 0 to pi, which is trivial because it's zero, right? Sine is zero, both at zero and pi, minus the second part of this Kapartes integration is a double integral over pi and theta from I. And I have to account for the fact that d omega also contains sine of theta, so that sine squared, of course, exactly for this reason. And this is I times 2 sine theta cosine theta d theta d phi. That's the second term. And it clearly results in h, as before, right? And because these two terms will result in h, and as a consequence, we have minus 2 times h arising from this integral, and minus, with this minus, is plus 2 over 2h over r. This third term is trivial because it's an integral of I, so that it will be kappa times rho times u. What else? And the last term is simply minus j times rho, and the integral of the omega and nothing else is simply 4 pi. It should be equal to 0. So let me conclude that our first integral of the radiative transfer equation is not very complicated. It's dh over dr plus 2h divided by r plus kappa rho u and minus 4 pi j rho equals 0.
Aren't we missing letter C?
Preliminary result. And it's still quite general equation. Well, let me do it once again. I mean, we have to compute also the second integral. Which is the same, but multiplied by cosine of theta. And it, of course, it will result in different quantities. I'm not going to show it in detail, but it's, again, it's very straightforward that the first term will be dPr over dr. The second one, which involves this partial derivative of I with respect to theta, and which have to be again integrated by means of Hipparchus, results in plus 1 over r times 3 dr minus u. And finally, we have plus rho kappa divided by C multiplied by H. The last term is zero, because if you multiply by cosine theta and integrate over theta, it's zero. So this is again zero. And that's our second governing equation, the second integral, valid for a spherically symmetric radiative transfer. And again, no approximation at this point. However, now we are going to use approximations. And it's very important to know exactly where and when the approximation occurs. So in this case, we are going to approximate the intensity as almost isotropic. And we discussed last week, what does it mean? That the intensity in this room is definitely not isotropic. Neither outside, because, for example, you have the sun somewhere on the sky, which irradiates and sends rays towards you. So this is clearly strongly non-isotropic intensity. If you focus on a thermal radiation, for example, in our atmosphere, then that's a different case, right? At a certain level, for example, 1 kilometer above the ground, you can assume that the thermal part of the radiation is almost isotropic. Maybe in the upper part of the atmosphere, that's again slightly different, because in the upper atmosphere, most radiation or some radiation escapes towards the space. And so it's definitely not exactly isotropic, because otherwise if you would have no flux to the outer space. So what does it mean, almost isotropic? It means that I, as a function of theta, can be decomposed to a constant plus amplitude times cosine theta, which is the departure from the isotropy, and all other terms are neglected in our case. And that's suitable situation or favorable situation, because then the integrals, the first integral, which results in energy density Q, 1 over C times this I theta, omega, to result in a constant multiplied by 4 pi, nothing else. So it's simply 4 pi over this C times I zero, great. And what about the remaining term? Well, there's nothing else. No? The energy density is hardly dependent on this cosine because the integral over the whole space, over the whole solid angle results in zero, right? Cosine is somewhere positive and somewhere negative, and the overall integral is zero. So it's that simple. Second, H monody, which is an integral over omega from this I theta times another cosine theta, z omega. What does it mean? Well, of course, the same argument holds as before. So that the first term in this case, which is multiplied by cosine omega, will be zero. And now we are interested in the second term with cosine theta squared. And that's indeed very interesting because this integral results in I1 multiplied by 2 pi from the integration over phi angle. And the primitive function is cosine theta to the third power with a minus sign and divided by 3. Which is equal to 4 pi divided by 3 and multiplied by I1. And finally, the quantity PR, or the radiative pressure, can be evaluated in a similar way as an integral over omega I theta times cosine theta squared. And you will probably believe me that this integral is or has to be somewhat similar to the first integral, with the only difference arising from this 3 in the denominator. And so it's 4 pi over 3c times I0. And that's it. That's it. And it's, as you can see, it's a perfect situation for us because there is a clear relation between U and PR. And that's our goal, right? And it's a very general approach in the radiative transfer physics that you simply try to find a relation between these integral quantities. And these relations are called closing relations. And let me emphasize that this is a key, right? If you would like to solve the radiative transfer, this is the key point to find a suitable closing relation. So it means that we obtained a closing relation I under this approximation, which is PR equals to 1/3 of U. Now, let's discuss it briefly. Why is it so important to have a closing relation? Do you know it? Any opinions? Why is it so important?
Because without a closing relation, we have an infinite system of equations.
I know it's a very, let me say, general question. Like, why is it important? But, you know, I think you should expect this kind of questions. Okay, perfect. So go on, please.
Yeah, I think you can't hear us.
Now I hope I can hear you this time.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Not yet. I'm sorry about this. I cannot hear anything, even though I have this switched on. This is again switched on. Oh my God. It's another problem with this connection. Could you write something down in chat, for example? You be so kind. And I will hope to find why there is this sort of problem. Okay, my audio actually works, because when I switch on some music, it can be heard, but I cannot hear you at all. Although your microphone seems to be detected, but it does not flash, right? There might be some problem on your side this time, because otherwise everything was my fault today. So anyway, if you can write something in chat, it would be great. But let me briefly explain it, that this closing relation allows you to stop a solution of higher moments of the radiative energy transfer. And you can see it, it's quite logical, that higher the integral is, immediately you will see a higher moment in the radiative transfer equation. And it's very logical. I see. Okay, thank you for this. But I really cannot understand why this happens. All right, so let me answer it myself. I'm sorry for this. If you perform an integral over a solid angle, the first time, the second time, the third time, immediately a higher moment appears in your equation. So unless you find a suitable closing relation, you will never stop. And it's logical, because in reality, the radiative transfer has to be solved for all directions at the same time. And they are coupled because, as we explained last week, there is a scattering source function. And the scattering from one direction into another direction results in this complicated structure of the radiative transfer. So that's why closing relation is really important. In our case, we found it for a almost isotropic intensity, and that's great. The third point, which is another approximation, is the LTE, or local equilibrium. because if we are close to the thermodynamic equilibrium, we can use the Kirchhoff law. Which in this case has to be adapted slightly because we have essentially two different terms, right, in the Kirchhoff law. Normally, it's only J equals to kappa times the source function, where the source function is usually approximated by the Planck function, because we work with quantities integrated over all wavelengths. And if it's the case, the value of S is simply sigma times T to the fourth power. However, this Stefan Boltzmann law only holds for half space. And because we are interested in all these quantities are related to a unit solid angle, you have to divide by 1/pi to be correct with units. And the other term is epsilon divided by 4 pi, because the value of epsilon, it's our quantity from the equation of thermal equilibrium, which is composed of essentially two parts. It's epsilon nuclear. And sometimes when we solve for a time-dependent problem, we have to subtract T times dS over dT. Because we can perform some work, right, also. All right, so this is the Kirchhoff law, which allows us to simplify our first and second integrals. And moreover, we can also avoid this flux, which is related to 1 m². It's per meter squared, but we already have a quantity of a similar type, which is LR. So the only problem here is that we have to relate somehow LR and this flux, which is indeed very simple. It's 4 pi R squared times H. Well, we also need some derivatives, and it's rather easy to compute. LR over dr is for sure 8 pi r times h plus 4 pi r squared dh over dr. So that we can use this relation to express DLR, sorry, DH over DR. And as a result, the first integral is as follows. It's rho times epsilon minus 2h over r plus 2h over r and plus kappa rho c u minus 4 pi, sorry, not 4 pi, this is cancelled, 4 rho sigma t to the fourth power, and minus this rho epsilon equals zero, which is a great simplification because we can subtract most of the terms. And we can express a very simple relation for the internal energy, for the energy density that I miss one kappa for the emission coefficient, of course. And this relation, as you can see, is indeed very simple, because it tells us that U is essentially 4 sigma divided by C and multiplied by T to the fourth power, which is sometimes abbreviated as A times T to the fourth power. And it's, again, a Stefan Boltzmann law expressed for the energy density, not for the integral intensity, and as in this case. And at the same time, when we use this closing relation, we immediately see or recover our original state equation for radiation, because PR is immediately 1/3 AT to the fourth power. Great. We're still not done, however. Because we have to use also the second integral, and that's my final goal. The second integral with all these quantities incorporated is 1/3 A times 4 T to the third power and dt over dr, right? That's from this relation. The second term is 1 over r, and now we have, if you recall, 3 times pr minus u, but this is clearly 0, right? So it's 0 in the bracket, plus the last term was related to rho kappa divided by C. And then instead of H, I'm going to use LR suitably divided by 4 pi R squared. And that's it. That's the relation I wanted to derive, because you can see immediately that this is this results in the following expression for dt over dr, because the whole equation is equal to zero. And then the result, we have dt over dr equal to minus 3 kappa rho times LR divided by, in total it's 16 pi A C and R squared and T to the third power. So let me emphasize that this is a very important equation. You have to know at midnight, and you should be able to guess it, actually, because just imagine, what is dt over dr? It's a slope, a derivative of temperature profile. So just imagine that in front of you, you have some parcel of gas, some material, right? If the opacity is large, which means that this piece of gas is not transparent, it's opaque, then the temperature gradient will be steep because radiation from my side to the other side cannot penetrate easily. That's it. It's also proportional to LR, and density is always used as a multiplicative factor with kappa. It's only a little bit harder to guess why there is R squared, but you know, LR and R squared are always related. And the most difficult part is to remember that there is T to the third power in the denominator. But if you recall the radiative transfer, which is essentially a derivative of the intensity, or in the second integral, it's the derivative of the radiative pressure, and you remember this relation, which is very basic, then it's clear that T to the third power immediately appears on the left-hand side of this term. All right, so that's the first part of our lecture. And let me think if we can or we should have a break, at least a very short break, because I would like to solve this problem with the sound. Tak možná uděláme teda krátkou přestávku na 5 minut a já se tady pokusím možná zapnout a vypnout ten meeting, jestli mi ten zvuk znovu nenastartuje. Takže se raz prosím za 5 minut.